I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 200 for the weekend starting 8 December 2017.
You heard right, 200 episodes.
I can't believe it.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, the EOH debacle.
Also this week, the multi-choice under fire, the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill gets skewered, Qualcomm gets into the PC business, and our picks of 2017.
It's Friday, it's almost the end of the year, and that means it's time to talk tech and drink beer.
Welcome to the podcast. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So, yes, we are indeed drinking beer today.
Cheers.
Episode 200. It's quite a milestone, I think.
It is a milestone. What a journey it's been so far. What some amazing conversations we've had on the show.
For sure. We did drink beer on the podcast for a while, but we don't anymore. But today, special occasion, and we are having Agar's Breweries Warrior Double IPA.
In my opinion, probably the best IPA/double IPA in the country.
It is very good.
If you haven't had it.
What exactly is a double IPA?
It's an IPA that's just stronger, better, hops, and that essentially means more alcohol. So, you know, when you put hops into a beer, it gives that nice fruity bitterness to it. Also, you know, it also kind of determines some of the alcoholic strength in there. And a double IPA is just, let's up the game, guys, and how can we make this a better beer? And that's basically what a double IPA is.
Oh, it's lovely, lovely stuff. It's quite citrusy.
It is citrusy, very fruity. That comes out, you know, the type of hops they use, you know, usually brings out that fruitiness or that grape fruitiness flavor.
Well, here's to episode 200, and it's almost the end of the year, as you said at the beginning, Richard, and it's been quite a year, and it's been a busy news week.
Sure.
Things are not quietening down. I'm hoping from next week things will get a little less manic, and I can actually start to catch up on all those hundreds of emails I have flagged up in my inbox.
I don't think anything's going to quiet down towards the end of this year. I mean, by all indications so far, it's going to be a straight through.
Crazy.
Maybe take a day or two off for Christmas, but...
It always starts slowly in the new year, though. I found that people are working later and later, right up to like 22nd, 23rd of December. And then January is dead for the first 2 weeks. And I think we're going to have a repeat of that this
probably
year.
Probably the
sometime.
Same,
So before we get into the news and before we even do our quiz, there's something very important that has to be debated. It was announced this week, or there was news published, speculation published this week, that the next Star Trek movie is going to be directed by none other than Quentin Tarantino.
What? What do you say? I can insert a whole bunch of expletives here, but we won't do that on the show.
As I said on, because I'll have to spend the whole afternoon editing.
Editing, beeping them out.
But imagine Samuel L. Jackson as captain of the Enterprise.
Yeah, there's no snakes on this Enterprise.
Say what one more time, Klingon.
Klingon, do you speak it?
The memes are going to be fantastic.
It will be fantastic. But I could also see it working. I can also see it working.
I love Quentin Tarantino's movies, and I'm a huge fan of the Star Trek Enterprise. Merge the two of them. I mean, certainly this will be the first non-PG Star Trek ever made.
R-rated, for sure.
But it could be good. It could be good if it happens. I mean, this is just speculation at this point. But of course, J.J. Abrams has gone off to do Star Wars,
and which I also look forward to. I think I'm a Star Wars fan. I recently got into the Star Trek series on Netflix, which I think is absolutely superb.
I've actually stopped watching it because we're so busy watching Bates Motel that I just haven't had a chance to watch. But
it's actually a good thing because you want to watch two or three of them after each other.
Yeah, that's true.
Waiting for a week to watch each episode doesn't really work. Yeah. In my opinion.
I've also been watching Rick and Morty after you recommended.
Oh, yes, what a show! It's what the possibilities you have with the infinite number of universes.
But yeah, Quentin Tarantino, Star Trek. I like that combination. And there, then he must get. If he does it, Samuel L. Jackson has to be there.
Yeah. And we want to. Yeah, we want to see dirty language. That's what I want out of Star Trek.
Dirty language.
Yeah, dirty language. See if we can break the previous records for using the F word.
I don't think they've ever used the F word in Star Trek.
But they also haven't used Quentin Tarantino to direct it. So.
That's true.
We don't know.
It'll certainly be the bloodiest Star Trek ever.
Yes, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure the special effects would introduce a few new interesting things.
Yeah.
But I think the franchise like that. I mean, you want to stay true to the form, I guess. But you also you also need to take it a step out of his comfort zone. And you know, you can pull it back if it doesn't work. But We've seen it before with previous iterations.
I hope you're ready for all the very lengthy monologues on the
well, on the bridge. Good monologues. I mean, his dialogue in his movies are usually spot
on. Yes. Let's hope it's not all in Klingon. That might be a bit too much.
Yeah, I'm sure it won't
be. All right, let's do our quiz. Do you want to do the first question?
Certainly. The first question of this week's quiz. Qualcomm this week took the wraps off its new hand processor for smartphones, which includes AI functionality. What is this processor called?
Interested parties have been given a new deadline to comment on the contentious Electronic Communications Amendment Bill. What is the new deadline?
The third question, which U.S. law firm is threatening to launch a probe into MultiChoice's controversial channel supply agreement with ANN7?
What does Elon Musk plan to launch with the first test of the Falcon Heavy rocket next month? And for a bonus point, what music will be playing on board?
I absolutely love that. Absolutely love that. And the final question, Travel Start this week brought which Cape Town-based online travel company?
That's our quiz. As always, we'll get to the answers at the end of the show. Before we get into our quiz, we've been doing a lot of podcasts over the last week on other platforms, not Talk Central. Rechot, you did a very interesting interview with the local MD or GM for Lenovo, where you spoke about 25 years of ThinkPad, amongst many other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed, actually, when I posted that story on Tech Central, I pulled up a picture of the original ThinkPad to go with that podcast.
And big, clunky brick.
It really was. It was amazing at the time. But today it looks very dated.
I mean, we were proud to carry those big, clunky notebooks around. I mean, design was secondary to functionality and that one-hour battery life that you used to get with them.
But go have a listen to that podcast if you've ever owned a ThinkPad. It's an interesting discussion.
Yeah.
I had a very fascinating discussion this week with Brandon Becker. Now, he's the MD, the regional MD for Mimecast. Have you spoken to the Mimecast guys in the past? They're
many years ago, yeah.
They're an interesting company. South African founded, but listed on the NASDAQ. They have a market cap of over 20 billion rand. They focus on email security. And they're expanding in the UK. They started in the UK, actually. They then expanded in South Africa, the US. They were moving into continental Europe, Asia, Australia, etc. And if they were listed on the JSE today, they would be by far the biggest IT company on the JSE.
Wow.
Currently four times the size of EOH.
That's incredible. Although, I didn't know that they were that massive.
Yeah. No, they've grown a lot. Their share price has really ramped up since they listed on the NASDAQ 2 years ago. Big company, and doing very well, and founded by two South Africans.
South Africans, yeah. We're getting to places, don't we?
Yeah, indeed. And then I had a really interesting discussion with Satumo Mohapi, who is the CEO of CETA, State IT Agency. Mm-hmm. Hell of a nice guy. He used to be at Centec. He really loved the Centec job, and I think he was a bit disappointed when he was shuffled out into CETA, which was a morass of corruption and incompetence. Anyway, he's been in the job for a while now, and he's been very quiet, but I had a podcast with him this week, and he's been kicking butt there, and he's been cleaning out the mess and the corruption and all the rest of it. It's quite nasty. He's had death threats against him. There was enormous corruption in the organization. But Satuma's a good guy. He's not taking any nonsense. It must be incredibly difficult to go into a snake's nest like that and start to clean it up. But he's doing it, and he's been threatened. He's getting in the way of the criminals, but he's cleaning it up. And kudos to him. We had a broad talk about the corruption problems inside the organization, the threats against him. How he's been cleaning up, firing people, just cleaning up the mess, basically. And, he's doing a good job by all accounts.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I mean, these are the unsung heroes of South Africa. I mean, the guys that are standing their ground. How many people would be able to take that position and live through that type of day-to-day
interaction? Must be awful. Must be awful. He loved his job at Centec. He probably could have worked at Centec for decades and he was redeployed into this position. But kudos to him. He didn't look at this and leave or look at this and just wash his hands of it. He said, this thing's a stinking mess. I'm going to clean it up. And that's what he's doing. So we'll be watching developments at CETA with a great deal of interest. So quite a few podcasts this week. I also did a podcast with the MD of Bulwyn Fibre. They're part of the Bulwyn Property Group. You'll have seen their townhouse complexes going up all over the place. They formed a new fiber to the home unit, specifically to roll out fiber into Bulwyn property developments. It was an interesting discussion as well. So that was with a guy called Andre. Andre, I've forgotten his surname. but go have a listen to that. I don't know why I forgot. Pillay, Andre Pillay. It's an interesting discussion, particularly if you're interested in that fiber to the home market and what's happening there. So let's get into the week's news, and my word, where do we start?
let's just pick the top story.
The top story. Well, it's hard to pick the top story. Let's start with EOH because it's very current.
Yeah.
Absolute spectacular disaster in its share price this week. So on Wednesday, the share price fell by 11%. There was no indication about why it had fallen. And
you just spotted this on your
I just saw
share
the markets.
Tracking?
Yeah, I just saw it in the markets. It's one of the companies I track. There was quite a lot of talk on Twitter about why the share price was falling. Anyway, it fell 11%. The share price has come down a lot this year already. And so the talk, you know, I just thought, you know, okay, it's come off 11%. That's a big fall, but it's been falling anyway, and it, you know, investors are obviously nervous about slowing growth and all that sort of thing. So I ignored it. And then the next day, the share price plunged at one point by 45%.
Wow.
Before closing down 35% in one session. I spoke to a range of analysts during the course of the day about it, and they also said, we don't know what's going on here. This doesn't make sense. This thing shouldn't be falling. It's a fundamentally a good business.
So somebody doing something and they're knowing something.
Yeah, so I chatted to David Shapiro, the well-known stockbroker, on Twitter about it, and he said, you know, someone's obviously got some inside information here. But the more I dug, eventually found out that there was a piece published in the Daily Maverick on Wednesday about a guy called Keith Keating and some businesses he owns, specifically one called FCA or FDA, I think, Forensic Data Analysis. Now, this is a company that EOH bought back in 2015. They bought three companies owned or run by Keith Keating, and they sold those businesses, they unwound that transaction. But let's get to that a bit later. So these businesses are involved or caught up in an investigation, and I recommend going to read the story on the Daily Maverick if you want more detail. Okay. There's a parliamentary probe by SCOPA, the what's it stand for again? Standing Committee on Public Accounts, and they're doing an investigation into the SAPS and dodgy dealings involving CETA and these companies. And there's a lot of concern about what all this means. And so EOH's name has become involved in this because EOH owned this company until October this year. EOH actually put out a statement trying to calm the markets last night, saying that we unwound the transactions of these three companies in which Keith Keating is either owner or certainly very much involved.
Yeah.
They said that this was unwound at the end of October, but you know, these companies were owned by EOH for a period of 2 years. So shareholders are obviously extremely nervous about this, especially in light of what we saw the previous day at Steinhoff. The big furniture retailer, where it was an accounting fraud and the CEO was fired, Markus Juster. Share price decimated, down 90%. Billions and billions of dollars of shareholder value wiped out. Christo Wiese, one of the country's richest men, has seen his personal fortune wiped out, basically. He was worth something like $5 or $6 billion earlier this year. Now he's worth about less than $1 billion. So massive destruction.
Less than $1 billion, yeah. Sure. That's still a lot of money.
It is, but massive.
But also some pension schemes, South African pension schemes, I believe, are in jeopardy now because of the investments made.
In jeopardy? I didn't see that.
Well, I mean, because of the value of those pensions.
I mean, it affects everyone. These companies, you know, if you've got a pension fund, a retirement annuity, any sort of investment thing that invests in the market locally, then you've probably indirectly had shares in companies like EOH and Steinhoff. Certainly you would have in NASPAS, for example.
Because
that's a huge chunk of the market. Yes. So a lot of this 45% decline in the share price on Wednesday has been attributed by analysts to contagion related to the Steinhoff thing. People saw the Daily Maverick story. They saw what was going on in Parliament with SCOPA and these companies, which EOH used to own. It wasn't known until last night that they actually don't own them anymore. So there was this massive sell-off, and many analysts said at least part of the thing that caused the sell-down is contagion related to Steinhoff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was expecting the EOH share price to bounce up this morning, but it didn't. It promptly fell by another 40%.
Wowzers. It's ridiculous.
It collapsed all the way down to, let me have a look here, 26 Rand 55. Now, this is a share that at the beginning of the year was trading at over 160 Rand a share, so down to 26 Rand. That's more than 90% of its value, if my maths is right. Close to 90% of its value.
Would it be a good time to buy now, if you were to speculate, and if the company is innocent?
I don't know. There's still a lot of questions that need to be answered.
Still a risky move, I guess.
In theory, looking at the numbers that they reported, looking at the share price, its price earnings multiple, and all the rest of it, it is insanely cheap. Insanely cheap. But the question is there more stuff that's going to be coming out of the woodwork?
Yeah.
We don't know the answer to that yet. So the share price then came back up again. I see it's starting to fall again, but it came back and actually started to trade a bit positively compared to yesterday's close. But it's now, as we're recording this, at top of 2 on a Friday afternoon, it's down 7%. So huge swings in the share price. With my record of share investing, I wouldn't suggest anyone listens to my advice on this sort of stuff.
But maybe you should do what you wouldn't plan on doing.
Yes.
And just do the opposite.
Buy Bitcoin.
But this is certainly not Bitcoin.
No, I was just going to say. The other troubling aspect of the story is that the head of he's a director of EOH and he's the head of the public sector business at EOH, a guy called, I might be mispronouncing his name, Jehan Mackay or McKay. I think it's McKay. Jehan Mackay. Has been dumping shares. Over the past 2 weeks, he has sold over 12 million rands worth of shares in EOH.
Sure.
Selling at around 80 rand a share or just above 80 rand a share. It's now dropped to 26 rand 55. You know, that's a massive share sale for someone working in the public sector, in the public sector area where the concerns that investors have are located.
Yes, he's
dumped over 12 million rands a share just before the share price collapse. I'm not saying that there's something untoward about this, but I just find the timing of it interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm sure the JSE is going to be looking into a lot of these issues. I spoke to, via their spokesman, I spoke to John Burke, who's the head of issuer services, I think, at the JSE, and he said they'd had a conversation with EOH during the day on Thursday when the share price was tanking, and his view was that there's nothing, no reason for the JSE to intervene and suspend the share for any reason.
Okay.
But I'm sure when you see wild swings like this, as a matter of course, the JSE would investigate and look into some of the share trades.
Yeah, I mean, that's not just simple two-digit numbers. These are very high two-digit numbers that the share price has dropped by. I mean, it's not natural in any normal scope of trade dealing.
No, absolutely. This is completely abnormal. Completely abnormal, and you know, I'm looking at the share price graph now. It's swinging up and down. It's unclear where this thing is going to settle, but it's trading on a price historic or trailing, to use a bit of financial jargon, a trailing price to earnings multiple of 5 at the moment. That's extremely low for any company, but it's a very hard, rough rule to use. But you can often measure whether a company is undervalued or overvalued by looking at its headline earnings per share. And then looking at its PE multiple against the headline earnings per share growth. And those numbers, and this is not always the case, but sometimes, quite often, those numbers do tend to correlate. And if the and I apologize to any analysts that are listening to the show, listening to me butchering the subject, but if there's a massive disparity between the headline earnings per share growth number and the price to earnings multiple, then it suggests the share is either undervalued or overvalued. But not always.
Okay. But it's some guidelines.
But certainly, it's some guidelines, certainly. And certainly, looking at EOH's full-year HEPS growth to July, which was 16%, and looking at its current PE multiple of 5, it would suggest that EOH is massively undervalued at this price. But what's coming next? Who knows? Is there more to come? So that's EOH, and I think we're going to... I think we're going to be probably talking about that again next week, somehow, suspect.
Oh, yes. It's going to be around for a while.
Yeah. And the other company that was in the news for all the wrong reasons over the last 10 days, in fact, the story was just breaking when we were recording last week, Wednesday, yes. MultiChoice and Naspers. It was a multi-choice story to start with, but now it's embraced Nasbash, which is its parent company. Again, a complex story. I'm not going to go into all the background because we'd be here all afternoon, but multi-choice has been accused, in essence, of using commercial contracts to try to influence government policy over encryption. We know the backstory about how multi-choice doesn't want encryption, argues that it's unfair for that to them in terms of the competitive landscape. It would be subsidizing competitors, and I tend to agree with that view, even though they do effectively have a monopoly in this market. Why should the government pay for that sort of subsidy? And ETV, which is very much in favor of encryption and says they need it for to secure good content and offer HD services with the latest Hollywood.
To compete with multi-choice.
To compete
really,
with multi-choice, yeah. Exactly. I've never really entirely bought that ETV argument. There may be something to it, but there is HDCP. I forget what that stands for. It's not high-def copy protection. It's something else. High bandwidth something, content protection, I'm not sure. But it's built into the HDMI spec for the cables you plug from the box. Into
so you can't rip off a stream.
And that's all.
People should just go to torrents if they want to rip there. I mean, it's almost like a moot point, right? Yeah. People aren't going to go through that effort.
Yes, exactly. Well, I suppose the content providers are worried that it'll make it easy for people to rip and then put it on the torrents.
No, for sure.
So multi-choice... there's so many angles to this, but let me try and summarize the salient ones. So there was this agreement with the SABC for the supply of two channels, a news channel and an entertainment channel. There was more to the deal, but that's the most important part of it. This was signed in 2013. Last week, the DA's Phumzile van Dam leaked the minutes of a meeting, and she didn't really leak it because it was provided by the SABC to the Parliament for part of its inquiry into the SABC. So it was a public document already. As soon as this gets handed to Parliament, it's a public document. But this meeting took place, I think, on the 6th of June 2013 at the SABC. Present were various SABC executives, including the chairwoman, the chief operating officer, Claudio Motsoneng, and several executives from Multichoice, including Nolo Letele, the chairman of Multichoice South Africa, and Imtiaz Patel, the then CEO of Multichoice South Africa, and who's now been promoted subsequently to the CEO of Naspatch's video entertainment unit, which has responsibility for the whole of Multichoice plus Showmax and some other things. So you'll recall, you might not recall, but back in 2014, I did an interview, and one or two other journalists did too, with Nolo Letele, in which details about this encryption clause that was contained. No, sorry, let me step back a bit. It emerged that there was a clause in the SABC agreement. That agreement was leaked, the channel supply agreement with MultiChoice. There was a clause in there that said that, and I'm paraphrasing here, that that the SABC, in terms of this deal, may not carry any of its 3G channels on a terrestrial platform that uses encryption. So in other words, the commercial agreement banned them from using encryption on anything that they distribute to the public. Now, this is the country's public broadcaster, so if that is contained in there, encryption is dead, in effect, because unless they break the agreement. Now, MultiChoice is accused of trying to engineer government policy, which at the time was in favor of encryption, through the back door. I then had the meeting with Nolo Letele at MultiChoice's offices in Randburg, where he said to me, and I wasn't the only one, other journalists attended, I think Toby Shapshak was one, and there were one or two other publications, I forget which ones. And at that meeting, Nolo Letele denied to me that they put pressure on the SABC, or that there was a contingent liability of the deal that this clause be included for it to go ahead. I wrote the story, and we left it there. Now, the DA publishes the minutes of the meeting from June 2016, and it's very clear from that meeting, Nolo Letele and Imtiaz Patel put enormous pressure on the SABC, saying that, with Nolo Letele specifically stating that it is a contingent liability. In other words, the deal won't go ahead unless it is included. So, in other words, they said to the SABC, if you don't put the clause in encryption there, we are not going to do this deal, and we're not going to pay you the 100 million rand we are offering you in terms of this agreement. So it looked at face value straight away to me like Nolo Letele lied to me. So I got hold of the multi-choice and asked them this question. Anyway, they came back to me and said that, he didn't lie to me. It was part of the hardball negotiations that they were engaged in with the SABC. That was his response to me. And, I'm not going to argue the point, but I'll leave listeners and readers of the website to draw their own conclusions. Then there was so that's the SABC deal, and that clause was included, and the DA is calling for a parliamentary investigation. I think that may go ahead. The ANC chief whip, Jackson Mthembu, has given his vocalized his support for an investigation as well. So I suspect we're going to have a parliamentary probe into at least that deal and possibly a lot of the other things around it, at which I suspect people like Imtiaz Patel, Claudio Motsoeneng, Nolo Letele, and possibly Chris Becker are going to be called to testify. And that's going to be fireworks, I'm sure.
Especially riveting watching.
Especially in light of the interviews that Chris Becker has done over the past 10 days with various radio stations, in which he's been very vehement in his denial that they've done anything wrong. In fact, the word he used on multiple radio shows was crap. He said, this is all crap what people are writing about Naspers. And Naspers put out a very hard-hitting statement saying people are undermining us, people are trying to cast aspersions against this organization, and it's unfair. Please stop from doing it. Of course, no one stopped from doing it. so they're certainly not the politicians who've been raising this issue, Mzila Van Dam and others. So then there's the deal with ANN7, which potentially is more serious. Imtiaz Patel said in various interviews, including one with the Mail and Guardian, which we published on Tech Central back, I think, in 2013 as well. Could have been 2014. I forget when that ANN7 channel actually launched. He denied in that interview with the Mail and Guardian that they were paying MultiChoice. Sorry, they were paying ANN7 for the channel. He said there's not a cent going to ANN7. Mm. So now we've got the Gupta leaks. The contracts have emerged. Amendments to the contract have emerged, rather. And it's very clear that MultiChoice has not only been paying ANN7, but it's been paying ANN7 a very large amount of money. Certainly in terms of the fourth amendment of that contract, it suggests that they made an upfront payment of 25 million rand, plus paid 141 million rand a year to ANN7, which is more than they were paying the SABC for the supply of two channels. The SABC News and the Entertainment Channel, which I think is called SABC Encore, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay,
it's sort of archives of the SABC. So ANN7 was owned by the Guptas when these deals were done. I think many people would argue that ANN7 is still owned by the Guptas, despite the transaction with Mzwanye Lemanye, which was a vendor finance deal, which in effect means that the Guptas financed the acquisition for Jimmy Manye. So it raises questions about whether Mzwanele Manye actually owns it or whether the Guptas own it still. There was these payments, and there's a lot more to the story. Clarissa Mack, who's a former regulatory executive of MultiChoice, was found to be lobbying Faith Mutambi, the Minister of Communications, on encryption, and then Faith Mutambi, according to the emails, was forwarding the Gupta leaks, was forwarding the mail straight to the Gupta members of the Gupta family. That doesn't implicate MultiChoice at all, because it's normal to lobby ministers, and this is the sort of thing they would be doing. It's scandalous that Faith Mutambi was forwarding these emails to the Guptas. That was just unacceptable. But not surprising, right?
Now that we see that for what it is, we can, yeah.
So the question is, were these large payments made to ANN7? Was were the payments increased to ANN7 to try and influence government policy through the Guptas? Because MultiChoice must have known that the Guptas were close to Faith Mutambi, exerted significant influence over government. So do you make large payments, which at face value don't seem to justify it, given how tiny ANN7 was and the fact that very few people actually watched the channel. What were they doing? Why were they making such massive payments, bigger than the payments they made to the SABC, to a tiny little unprofessional, I mean, we can call it that, very unprofessional news channel called ANN7? owned by a family, you know, where there were already huge questions being asked about various matters, even back then. Were they doing it because they felt that they could somehow influence their position on encryption through those payments? Now, we don't know that. We don't know that at all. It may have been completely justified. I don't know. It looks it looks odd. The numbers look odd at face value. And I think these are the sort of questions, and I think we need a parliamentary inquiry because there's so many questions here, and it needs to be aired and it needs to come out. MultiChoice said that they're going to well, first of all, NSPAC CEO Bob van Dijk, who took over from Chris Becker, said they're going to leave it to MultiChoice to the MultiChoice board to deal with this issue. And he kind of washed his hands of it. He did an interview. I think his first interview was with Bruce Whitfield on 702. No, it wasn't. It was with Rick van Niekerk from MoneyWeb. And he kind of washed his hands of it. And I wrote a piece on the whole situation saying, you can't do this. I mean, this is impacting NSPAC. It impacts NSPAC reputationally. And besides, Bob van Dijk, you sit on the board of MultiChoice. Are you supposed to investigate yourself here? You know, many of the people who are involved in this, implicated in this, if you like, sit on the MultiChoice board. People like Nolo Letele and MTS Patel, who were party to those negotiations with the SABC and would have been party as well with to the negotiations with ANN7. So I think the I think that even if MultiChoice's board can conduct an independent study, and maybe they can, they've appointed an independent non-executive director to do the investigation. The problem is people won't trust the outcome because it's an internal investigation. It's an investigation commissioned by the board of MultiChoice. I think SAP did very well when they were accused of all this graft and corruption. They appointed an external independent law firm to do the investigation. They had their own internal investigation as well, but they also appointed an external law firm to look into it. And I think NSPAC has missed a trick here. I think Chris Becker came across as very arrogant in those radio interviews. It was, you know, how dare you accuse us? This is the impression I got. It was, how dare you accuse us? We haven't done anything wrong. We haven't done anything illegal. And it may very well be that they haven't done anything illegal. It's quite possible they haven't done anything illegal. But looking at all of this stuff and the way the MultiChoice behaved through this whole fight over encryption, they certainly played dirty, and I would suggest that they crossed an ethical line, probably multiple times on various issues. I think the person who's actually come out of this looking quite good is Yunus Karim, a former communications minister, I think who's been delighting a bit in some of the radio interviews that he's been doing around this issue, because he came under enormous pressure from MultiChoice at the time. You'll recall that MultiChoice took out a full-page ad in Sunday newspapers attacking him over his position on encryption. It was an extraordinary thing for a company to do, to take out a full-page ad in a Sunday newspaper to attack a government minister. I couldn't believe it when I saw it at the time. I suspect they probably regret doing that. You know, it was signed by MTS Patel. I think MTS Patel's signature was on it, and some other small players who were supporting MultiChoice on the encryption battle. I strongly suspect that the ad was signed off by Chris Becker as well. I don't think they would have done something. They almost certainly wouldn't have done something without Chris Becker's backing. So Chris Becker is intimately involved in all of this stuff as well. So I think a parliamentary probe is probably the best way of getting to the bottom of everything that's happened here, because there's a lot of dirty laundry that needs to be aired. And even if MultiChoice hasn't broken the law, I think it does need to account for the way it's behaved on some of these issues. At the least, it's played extremely hardball, and probably taken advantage of a government that didn't really know what it was doing until they came up against quite a formidable cabinet minister in the form of Yunus Karim, who thought for himself. I don't think Yunus Karim made the right conclusion in the end, by the way. I think that, and I think also that MultiChoice is right about encryption, but possibly for the wrong reasons. Encryption, I don't think, makes sense for South Africa. But, you know, why did they play so hardball? You know, they say they were fighting this because it didn't make sense for South Africa. Were they really fighting it because it wasn't in their commercial interests for there to be encryption.
They definitely have more to gain, that's without a doubt. I mean, why why would a company be involved with this on such a level if it doesn't have significant gains to get from it, you know?
Yeah. So there's lots more to the story, but I've spoken in some detail about it already, so let's I should probably leave that one there. It's going to run for a while. But
it'll be around for a while.
Parliamentary investigation sounds like a fantastic idea to me. Get these guys to testify. Let's get the full story.
Yes.
Right. I need a sip of beer, and we need to take an ad break, so we'll be back right after this.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox Fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox Fiber, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to the podcast, episode 200. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan? 200 indeed. Can you believe it?
Yeah, incredible. How's your beer going down?
Yeah, this is still one of the best beers in the country.
Stunning, stunning. In case you missed it at the beginning, Agar's Brewery Warrior Double IPA. Fantastic stuff.
Brewed right down the road in Kaya Sands. And if you ever get the opportunity to go to the brewery, it is well worth it. They often have open days. You can drink beer with a brewer and just chat to like-minded beer drinkers. It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Very nice stuff, yeah. So, staying on politics, I suppose, the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill is drawing all sorts of fire. Again, I'm not going to rehash all of this stuff because we have spoken about it extensively in the past. But basically, the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill is an amendment to the Electronic Communications Act, which is going to bring very significant changes to the governance of the ICT sector in South Africa. It proposes the introduction of a wholesale open access network. Makes significant changes to spectrum policy and various other things, but it's been roundly condemned. Although I see the Internet Service Providers Association is generally supportive of it. The rest of the industry has been fairly critical, particularly Vodacom and MTN. And the Free Market Foundation. I went to a presentation by Leon Lowe, who's the executive director of the Free Market Foundation. They're on this subject like a hot rash, if you like. They're condemning it, basically calling the government duplicitous in its dealings with the industry, saying that they've reneged on the agreement of a hybrid model, which was like a kind of a middle road that the government and the operators had hoped to, or certainly the operators had hoped to forge. The Electronic Communication Amendment Bill still talks about the possibility of taking away spectrum from operators that they use to build their 2G, 3G, and 4G networks. It also says that the operators will not be able to roll out any spectrum that they might happen to be allocated until the WOAN, the Wholesale Open Access Network, is operational or functional. I think the word was in the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill. The government's pushing ahead hard with this. To me, it looks like a fundamental mistake that's going to do enormous damage to the industry. Certainly, it's a view that Leon Lowe at the Free Market Foundation shares, and I think the operators privately are absolutely horrified about this bill. The Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services has called a press conference for next Tuesday to talk about it. It's being held, interestingly enough, at Citibank in Sandton. Which I thought was really interesting because it's an odd place for a left-wing government to be talking about a policy issue in the seat of capitalism in the middle of Sandton. But yeah, there we go. It's happening next Tuesday. Industry very upset about this thing. The deadline was the 17th of December to comment on it. They've now extended that to the 31st of January, which is still not a lot of time to comment on a very important piece of legislation, or prospective legislation. But, it's going to be a huge bun fight, I suspect. And if the ECA amendment bill goes through in its current form, then I think this whole thing's going to court.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about more fun things.
Yeah, let's get to the tech, not to these depressing politics.
We've had too much of that this year anyway. You've had a look at this story, Rechard. I've only looked at it tangentially, but Qualcomm announced in Hawaii, of all places, last week. In fact, I was invited to go on that trip, and I had to turn it down. I was really, really grieved.
That's terrible, Duncan.
But a week on the wrong, on the exact opposite side of the earth would not have done much good for my productivity.
Yeah, and the travel time there is horrendous.
Horrendous.
So Qualcomm definitely seems to be doing some really interesting things. Yeah. And for the first time, we're seeing a chipset manufacturer really taking on the big players, you know, the likes of Intel. And I think they're onto something here. I mean, we've seen what mobile architectures have done to smartphones. I mean, we don't have Intel smartphones these days for a reason. You know, Qualcomm has really been one of the companies that developed the chipsets that, you know, that these devices need to run on. Battery life, LTE modem chipsets, Wi-Fi, and all the good stuff that, you know, we've come to learn and love from our smartphones these days. But it makes sense for them to take the technology and say, what else can we do with it? I mean, we're getting to a point with our smartphones and in many, arguably, with our computers as well, where the speed of a computer is good enough. The processing power is good enough, the RAM, the memory, all these things. You can do so many things with a decent mid-range to high-end computer these days. But there's still a gap for, I mean, obviously, we still have massive battery issues. We're not getting the battery life that we all desperately want from a notebook computer, which, you know, we want at least a few days or, you know, more than
at least a full day.
Now, Qualcomm obviously has been doing a lot of thinking around this technology and how they can, you know, how they can bring it out. Now, with the Qualcomm 835 that was launched last year, I think it was, it's now available in the S8, those range of phones, high-end.
It's the 835.
The 835, yeah. Now, they've already developed the 835 processor in a platform, a notebook platform that can run Windows, surprisingly efficiently.
It's an ARM processor, right? ARM architecture processor.
Yes. using, obviously, emulators to do so. So you do lose maybe a fraction of performance power through that.
Is it under emulation? I thought Windows was available native on
ARM. Native on ARM. From what I've read, there is definitely some emulation going on that.
Oh, right.
On that chip. But, okay. But the end result here is a notebook computer that essentially runs like your smartphone. So think of your smartphone with a much bigger screen with a keyboard. In many ways, like you would expect an iPad-like computer to be, which is a very strong mobile device, you know, with the capabilities of a notebook. So the 835 up till now has been the chipset to get, but now Qualcomm has launched or announced at this event the 845, which is now the next iteration. And by all... By looking at it, you know, this is certainly going to be the one that's going to make this a viable solution for many road warriors who want the battery life.
Is that the processor they're actually putting into the PCs?
Well, the 835 is currently available into a PC. You can get a Acer or HP. I think they've got notebooks.
Oh, wow.
Lenovo's also got one, I think, that runs on this architecture. But the 845 is the one you probably want to hold off for the 845 rather than getting something on the current technology.
And 845 will be the processor that gets used in the Galaxy S9 in general.
Yes. And all the, I mean, yeah, the high-end smartphones these days. I mean, it's got a couple of benefits in terms of LTE as well. So now, again, imagine Qualcomm-based notebook with the eSIM built in. Their dream of having you connected all the time using their chipset obviously is now one step closer to reality, and it makes it a much more lucrative, I guess, a concept for notebook users. Some of the other things that's interesting about the Qualcomm. So in essence, I mean, the fact that Qualcomm is now taking on the likes of Intel, producing real hardware for people to do their day-to-day computing, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me, and I think they're going to do very well. If I was Intel, I'd be a bit worried, because Intel, up until now, as good as what their processors are, they haven't cracked that performance battery life benchmark. You know, they just haven't managed to do it properly the way that we would expect them to. So with the Qualcomm 845, I think we're going to see the first iteration of, you know, all-day performing computers, all-day performance computers. Now, the 845 also has a few other interesting things up its sleeve, and one of them is a security chip. Sorry. Now, I don't know if you don't understand how this architecture works, let me quickly give you a rundown.
Sure.
These aren't a traditional CPU like you would expect your Intel CPU on your motherboard to be. It's a collection of chips that form part of this processor that you have in your phone. Now, one of the things that they're touting as one of the big features is a security chip that'll handle all your security-related processing needs on your operating system. So if anything from your fingerprint reader to encrypting files, this dedicated chip will handle that directly, which I think is fantastic. Let me just open that. Sorry, I've closed my link here. 4K video is another massive thing. We know 4K, obviously, in high-end video cameras is one thing, but on your phone, having, you know, 4K at 60 frames per second is virtually non-existent because of the chip's capability to process that amount of data coming through that image sensor. So with that, obviously, we'll see not only better video quality on your smartphones, but we were talking about this before the show. This will also help a lot with processing 4K footage. So now all of a sudden, if I've got a Qualcomm-based notebook, I'm not saying it'll outperform a high-end Intel processor notebook because these two are still playing on different level playing fields. But with a chip optimized for this processing capabilities, processing using Adobe Premiere Pro, for example, you'd probably find render times being much quicker. And it would be a good thing for people that just want to cut, for example, short clips together. They also talk about machine learning, which is going to be quite interesting. And we've seen this with the likes of Huawei with their, I can't remember what it was called, their artificial intelligence chip.
Yes.
They have this chip. Now, essentially, that's also just a separate processor that's designed to just handle dedicated functions. So instead of burdening the main processing power or some of the other units with, you know, offloading the processing requirements, these chips are designed to handle it, dedicate it, handle it, and offer better performance in so doing. And then obviously there's going to be improvement in performance, in graphics and Wi-Fi, which is going to be a big thing. Obviously much faster LTE speeds. And like I said, with a dedicated eSIM in a notebook, you'll be able to have always-on connectivity without your notebook being always-on. So when you open it, data would have been downloaded. So you're kind of moving away from the limitations that we have with Wi-Fi and notebooks. Mm-hmm. So you'll have the smartphone experience on a notebook. And yeah, from what I've seen, you know, this is going to be a technology to look out for, without a doubt.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. So it's Asus and HP that have built the first notebooks using Qualcomm processors.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll see them in the South African market in the not too distant future, so
I'm
can
sure we'll
look at
see
them.
Yeah, I think the first on the 845, I think they will international launch dates are first quarter next year. So I would imagine mid to end next year we'll start seeing 845-based chipsets available on notebooks.
Yeah. I wonder why Qualcomm might be launching the 845 in the early part of the year. Just in time for Mobile World Congress.
Oh yeah, just in time, and I'm sure they've ceded this to all the manufacturers already, and they need to take on this AI. I mean, this is the big thing that we're dealing with at the moment.
AI.
But I'm very excited about the fact that you know, we were also, when we talk about battery life, we were always trying to get better batteries, but that was only one part of it. Mm. Getting your computer to perform using as little power as possible is the key. So yeah, exciting things from Qualcomm. I'm definitely going to keep an
eye. I'm going to go read more on that this weekend. I've been so busy with EOH and multi-choice and other things that I didn't actually have a chance to look in that in detail, but it's quite exciting stuff.
Yeah, there's some good technical articles out there as well.
I've been reading a magazine, by the way, a British magazine called Maximum PC. I don't know if you've come across it.
Oh, that used to be my favorite magazine back in the day. I didn't know they were still around.
Yeah, very good. Some excellent technical articles, and you can buy it you subscribe to it on iPad.
Is it the internet, the US version or the UK?
UK. It's a UK magazine, I think. Published by Future.
Yeah, you're right. It is Future. Yeah, it's UK.
It's a very good magazine. The editors really know what they're talking about, and they go deep dive into processor architectures and all that sort of stuff, which I used to follow very closely 20 years ago, but have kind of lost interest as I focus more on business and politics and all the other sort of stuff. But it's amazing to see those debates. And some of the arguments that you read about in there now are so similar to what was they were arguing about 20 years ago.
Exactly. It's just the architecture that changes or the chips that changes that you talk about. You know, it's never enough.
It's just that they're hundreds of times powerful than they were back then. Not thousands of times more powerful. And some of the stuff that these high-end gaming geeks are doing is quite amazing. Quite amazing. But if you really want to geek out on some serious hardcore tech, Maximum PC is very good.
Yeah, I second that.
Right. What were we talking about? Qualcomm? Oh, that's the news. Right.
Let's move on to our regular features.
Not our regular features, as Monty Python might say. I thought I'd pick Yunus Karim as our winner this week because he really, in this fight with MultiChoice, he really has emerged quite well. I think he had a very difficult time when he was the minister. He was trying to craft a middle way between the warring parties. He didn't really succeed. I think probably because that solution he came up with wasn't really workable. But, you know, I think he's been delighting a bit in multi-choice, taking a bit of a punch this week. And fair enough to him. I mean, multi-choice really played hardcore with him. Those ads in the Sunday Times and elsewhere were really unfair, yeah. I thought, uncalled for. I think he's emerged very well out of the reportage this week on multi-choice and ETV and encryption and all the rest of it. He's come across very reasonably, and I've got no doubt he's enjoying himself. So our winner this week, Yunus Karim, and our loser this week is quite obvious, EOH.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm going to pick on them because they're just so bad at communicating. You know, the share price tanked. They didn't say anything all day. Trying to get someone to communicate with me was almost impossible. Eventually, I actually did manage to speak to someone after 5 o'clock, after the markets closed. Mm. But you know, even the SEN statement they issued yesterday, trying to settle the markets, was very, very, what's the word? Short. It was too short, I thought. Yeah. In light of what was going on, they needed to provide a bit more clarity. And I think the executive management team needs to make themselves more available, certainly to the media. I think the company needs to rethink the way it communicates with the market, because it has not been doing a good job of it. And that's very much as clear, it is patently clear after this week and the collapse in the share price. The share price collapsed because there was a lack of information in the market about what was going on,
yeah.
And the company was generally unavailable to comment on developments.
Yeah, that's a big business. You shouldn't be running your communication department like that.
No.
And we're talking about millions and billions of dollars effectively being wiped off the face of the earth because of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to talk about it. You need to talk to the people.
Then they need to appoint someone in a senior role, communications role at the company, to deal with the press. And they don't have that at the moment. Not internally, anyway. Right. I think I've had too much of this IPA.
You only have one.
Only one. One large
just,
one.
Just goes to show how really good this beer is.
It is lovely, yeah. Yeah. It's a very... it's not a fast-drinking beer. It's a beer you savor slowly.
Well, I can tell you to you from experience, this is very sessionable. Mm-hmm. Sessionable. On the right day.
Yeah. Sessionable as in what, too?
Sessionable, yeah.
Sessionable. Right. Let's... where am I? I really am this beer.
We are on Picks of the Year right now.
Picks of the Year. Thanks, Rafat. So what's your...
So I did think long and hard about this. There was a lot of stuff that I could have thrown out there. And I do have a lot of favorites of the year. And I've spoken about most of them on a podcast before. But I thought the one that I'm going to pick, it's not only because I'm incredibly excited about this technology, but because it's finally available in South Africa. And... I actually haven't found anybody that doesn't like the concept of this technology. And my pick is the HTC Vive, just because it's finally here. It's giving us the dream of augmented reality or virtual reality. I wouldn't say it's affordable yet, but it's accessible. And many tech people in the industry, if you've been to the likes of Rage, you know, some of the new shows, you would have seen it. They would have tried it. So, yeah, HTC Vive is my pick. I'm very excited about it. I'm getting my... demo unit next week, so we should be able to do some proper game time in the next 2 weeks. But yeah, I'm picking that because what a technology, and it's available right now.
Please bring it to our podcast recording next week if you have it, because
yes, we will. If I've got it, I wouldn't do it.
We're trying to arrange a special podcast for next week. No details yet because I don't want to jinx it. But if you've got it, please bring it along to that recording.
It would actually complement the topic.
It would indeed. So my pick is it's actually two apps that have been around for a couple of years now, but I am finding them increasingly useful. In fact, I'm using them on a daily basis, sometimes multiple times a day, and that's Zapper.
Yes.
Which is developed, I think, by a Durban-based company called Derivco. I could be mistaken there, but I think they're developed by Derivco. And SnapScan, which comes out of Cape Town, Stellenbosch, I think, and has an investment or a partnership, may even be owned by, I think it's completely owned by, but certainly they've got an arrangement with Standard Bank.
Yeah.
And they're brilliant. Zapper in particular I use all the time because most restaurants support Zapper.
It's got
Zapper.
It into the POS system, yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of integrated on the slip.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
I've seen a lot of people do both as well. So a lot of places have both on their system.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So almost just about in every restaurant I go to now, little Bullerize, little Zapper, zap that. I walked into a convenience filling station on William Nicol the other day, and I wanted to buy a sandwich because I was hungry on my way to a meeting. And on the little screen there, it said pay with Zapper. So I scanned the screen, the little barcode on the screen, paid with Zapper, walked out.
That's fantastic.
And it's becoming more and more ubiquitous. I'd love to pay with Zapper at Pick and Pay if I could.
I don't
have to haul out my credit card, type in a PIN number and all the rest of it. I just scan with my phone. Then I don't have to take my wallet with me.
Yeah.
I mean, if most places accepted these things, and more of them are accepting it, then you don't have to actually carry your wallet with you anymore.
And especially at upcoming you often do runs and go to trail running events and things like that. Having something like this there where before you had to have cash, and who remembers to have cash, and you don't run with your cash and you don't have it. With something like this, literally the merchant just have a little tag, and then you just can't and pay them the amount you want.
It works brilliantly at flea markets as well.
The technology is fantastic.
And the merchants don't have to handle cash.
Yeah.
In fact, I've seen there's a flea market event in Pretoria happening, I think, this weekend or next weekend, where they banned cash. They said, we do not accept cash for security reasons. Come just and scan.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
What I do worry about, though, and as much as I love Zapper and SnapScan, as soon as true contactless payments come out here with phone, give it maybe 2 or 3 years, these guys are going to have a bit of a harder time because they've filled a very nice gap in the right time. Although I guess you can argue that a lot of these small merchants like flea markets, they would have a piece of paper that says scan my code. So the overlap will probably be there. But yeah, one of my favorite technologies, I hate handing over my card. If I can just use this pay, I'm in control of that transaction every step of the way.
I use Tap and Go several times a day as well. Pick and Pay, I always Tap and Go.
You see, I've only started using that because my new cards, only now my new cards have that functionality on. But a lot of guys, not a lot of guys that I've been to can tap.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just about the merchant.
Yeah. Yeah, no, some merchants accept, some don't. My local spa got the machines that accepted Tap and Pay. And I tapped my card and said, sorry, not rejected. And so I asked the manager why can't I do this? And he said, oh, no, people are worried about it. They don't want to tap. They're worried about the security. So I said, nonsense, absolute nonsense. And every time I went in there, I said, why can't I tap yet? Why can't I tap yet? Every time I went to make a purchase. And then last week I walked in and they got a little sign there saying, you can now tap and pay at this 4 point.
Fantastic. No, I think, I mean, that's the way to do it. Having the ability to just tap and pay, I mean, obviously for small amounts, for bigger amounts, I would love to know that I put in a pin and have that extra level of security. But it's just a matter of the rollout. We need the rollout much quicker now. And the banks and merchants just need to, I guess it's acceptance from the general public.
Mm.
But a lot of companies now, just to sidetrack a bit, I've seen a lot of retail shops now, also instead of you putting your card in, instead of them putting the card in, you deal with a terminal. So you put your card in, put in the pin, take your card out. Because I'm a bit of a OCD freak when it comes to my card being in so many people's hands. You know what I'm saying?
Me too.
I hate that. Yeah. I hate giving my card out to somebody to work with. Because of, you know, just, I guess, general hygiene and, you know, that machine, that card goes everywhere with you.
Yes.
And a lot of people can handle it in any given day. But yeah.
Yeah.
Snap and zap scan.
What I haven't tried yet is to pay with my phone, because I believe you can tap and pay with your phone as well using the...
I don't think that is available yet, because a card, obviously, that's a direct thing from your bank, so that chip on that card and the terminal. I haven't seen anything, even though it's...
Well, I'm an FNB customer, and the FNB app claims you can do it.
Oh, the FNB app. Yeah. See, that's still...
So fire up the phone, tap the phone, uses the phone's...
NFC,
and then you make the payment through the app. I'm not quite sure what it actually looks like. But
it should work on the same terminal as your card then, right?
It should. I believe it works. I haven't tried it, but I believe I can tap my phone at a Pick and Pay point of sale and pay. I'll try it next time I'm there.
That'll be cool. I mean, it's a little homework for me.
Because then with SnapScan and Zapper and Tap and Pay with your smartphone, you really don't need to take your wallet with you.
You don't need to, exactly. Mm. Fantastic.
Don't know who's going to pay the car guard, though.
Car guards have had SnapScan. I mean, that's the best thing, isn't it? Scan the guy and give him R5 or whatever.
Yeah.
Or scan and say you're going to pay. No, you can't do that, Shane. Saying you're going to pay him and then drive off. But
that would make sense, actually. If I was one of those guys, I'd probably get a little SnapScan thing. Paying Zap, that'd probably make more money.
And you pay a lot less than a credit card, I'm sure.
There's no charge to you.
No, I'm talking about as the merchant, don't they pay?
Oh, right.
They pay for.
Yeah, there would be a
fee. They would need a bank account.
That's true. That's very true. I think you can pay with SnapScan. I think you pay for parking in Cape Town with SnapScan.
There was a trial up here as well.
Yeah.
The same guys. They did it in Joburg City Centre. I haven't seen them since.
Oh, yeah.
They had like big blue overalls on. And.
But that's a Cape Town thing. That money's not going to the guy guarding your car. It's going to the city of Cape Town, I presume.
Probably, yeah. Probably because, I mean, it'll be like paying street parking.
Yeah, exactly. Joburg, I didn't even know Joburg had any street parking left.
Yeah, 2 years ago, I may have written a story about it, where they did a trial out here at the Mabuneng precinct.
Okay.
Okay. But yeah, I haven't seen it since. I don't think it worked.
Oh.
Well, we'll have to see.
All right. Well, that is our show, apart from our quiz results. Let's do those, shall we?
Yes. The first question. Qualcomm this week took the wraps off its new high-end processor for smartphones and soon also desktop notebooks, which includes AI functionality. What is that chip called? And the answer there is the Snapdragon 845.
Interested parties have been given a new deadline to comment on the contentious Electronic Communications Amendment Bill. What is the new deadline? And that is the 31st of January 2018, which is just around the corner.
Just around the corner, yeah. Can you believe it? The third question. Which U.S. law firm is threatening to launch a probe into MultiChoice's controversial channel supply agreement with ANN7? And the answer there is Pomerantz.
Fourth question, my favorite question in the quiz this week. What does Elon Musk plan to launch with the first test of the Falcon Heavy rocket next month? And for a bonus point, what music will be playing on board? And that is a Tesla Roadster. What a waste if it blows up. And David Bowie's Space Oddity.
I put that down as my thing of 2017. It's just awesome. And the last question in this week's quiz. Travel Start this week bought which Cape Town-based online travel company? And the answer is Safari Now.
And that is our quiz for this week. I almost lost my train of thought. I'd blame this wonderful Warrior double IPA. Yeah. Mm.
I might have another one. Let's go for another one after this.
Sounds like a good idea. It's Friday afternoon, and I think if I try and edit the podcast after having this, I might make some very big mistakes. we might have an incident with Star Trek and some foul language or something.
Proper incident.
I was trying to get YouTube up to play a little bit of David Bowie, but it's running very slowly here. Right. Let me go back to my show notes. I am really dear Markov today. Show notes. And that's our show. Yeah, as always, if you've got any feedback, info@techcentral.co.za is our email address. We love to hear from you, and we read all of your messages. So as for episode 200, we look forward to hundreds more.
Breaking the seal on 201.
201 next week, and possibly our last of the year. We might do two more, but probably just one more, actually. We really are heading up into it now, aren't we?
Yeah. We can definitely try and squeeze one in maybe before the end of the year.
Yeah.
But, yes, I'll definitely do another The Best in Tech. I've got two lined up.
You've got two of those. Yeah, great.
I wouldn't say what they are. They are going to be good ones, so keep an eye out on them. There might be some Xbox involved.
Great stuff. Great. Oh, of course, the Xbox One X is just around the corner, so I'm guessing what that one might be about. I'm thinking of buying one of those. I don't know if I need it, though. I don't have a 4K TV.
You're just future-proofing yourself, because I was close to buying the Xbox One the older model, because they were all going for really good prices, obviously in anticipation of the new launch. If you don't worry about 4K, then it's definitely worth getting one of the older ones.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you want to future proof yourself, make sure you've got the latest one.
But I am thinking of buying a new PC next year, so maybe I should save for that.
Yeah. I'll put you in contact with some guys. I'm also building myself a new, for the first time in years, I'm going to go back to a good old PC rig to do some testing and benchmarking.
Nothing beats it.
Yeah.
Nothing beats it.
So I'm going to have an open rig that we can just slot stuff into and test and see.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Now, I've always just bought a PC and ordered some components, but this next year I plan to actually spend the time doing the research and custom building a proper rig right from the case. Power supply.
Let's do something. Let's record it, because I'm also busy with that kind of thing. I think we can make a nice series for people who want to also do something similar. I mean, it's still a price exercise, but that's why you want to get the right components. And you don't always need to go for the most extreme version of something. I mean, a Core i7 basic version is much better than a Core i9, in my opinion.
And I wouldn't go for a Core i9. Yeah. The prices of those are insane. But maybe we can invite our friend Dimitri from Mustek to join us, and he's a real expert on the subject, so maybe he can provide us with some views and inputs, and I'm probably going to work with Dimitri, actually, to build my machine. So.
Cool. Yeah,
looking forward to
it. Yeah, let's do it.
Proper project, which is why I was reading Maximum PC magazine, by the way.
Oh, love that magazine. Love it.
Right, until next week, from Rechel and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.